Hi, I'm Lise Wheel, and this is Wheel of Justice. Well, as you know, we usually investigate real murders, but I've decided to take a week or two off to actually speak to people who do a fictional murder. Now, of course, we don't want to really see murders in real life, but we all enjoy a good fictional murder. And so who better could I bring into Wheel of Justice than my dear friend now? I interviewed her for her last book, Flesh and Blood. She's sold more than 100 million copies in 36 languages. Patricia Cornwell, I just worship at your feet. I hope they're not dirty because I'm worshiping at them. And she's got a new book coming out October 27th called Depraved Heart. Welcome to Wheel of Justice.
Well, it's wonderful to be with you again. And Depraved Heart is something you would know about since that's a legal term. And you're my local friendly legal genius. So it was a very interesting book to research. And the irony is, when I came up with the title for it some time ago, it was before, of course, what happened in Baltimore and Depraved Heart, that term, that type of murder began to be all over the news. Because as you know, it's an archaic term and a lot of people don't know what it means.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about, well, I want to hear more about the title, but let's go back a little bit and introduce everyone who may not have heard about Kay Scarpetta. She's your main, Dr. Kay, I should say, your main forensic examiner, and she's there in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which, you're there as well doing your research. Tell us what Kay stumbles into and how it involves her niece in Depraved Heart.
Well, what's fun about this is Scarpetta is responding to a death scene. And in fact, when the book opens, she's literally standing in the foyer of the centuries-old house that's right off of Brattle Street, which for those familiar with Cambridge, like you are, you know that's right at the edge of the Harvard campus, mm-hmm. a very beautiful part of one of the wealthiest areas in the country, really. And there's this woman who's is bludgeoned to death, and she's lying on the floor, and there's blood everywhere, and that's where you find Scarpetta. But what she's looking at is something on her phone. And you're thinking, why is Scarpetta looking at her phone when she should be looking at the body?
Right.
It's because an alert has just sounded on her smartphone, and it appears to be a very private message from her niece, Lucy, who's a techno wizard, an MIT-type person. And Scarpetta's thinking, this is strange. Why is she alerting me on this in case of emergency number? And then suddenly this video starts playing. And it's a video of something taken of Lucy way back 20-something years ago, or almost that long ago, when she was at the FBI Academy, when she was a new agent in training. And Scarpetta's looking at this footage of someone who must have spied on Lucy in her dorm room back then. And so it takes off from there, and Scarpetta has to leave this crime scene for a couple hours because of this emergency that's happening. And then when she goes back, all hell breaks loose. There's strange things going on in that house and sounds that don't make any sense. And we begin to worry that she is flirting with some really bad stuff.
And can she confide in Lucy, her niece, about any of this that's going on?
Well, when she rushes to Lucy's house, she has this big place on the river in the Concord area of Massachusetts. She finds that Lucy's in the midst of being raided by the FBI. So she doesn't, there's a helicopter flying overhead. There's guards, there's agents all over the place. And the property is under siege. And so we don't know what is happening, except that it appears that they are searching Lucy's property and trying to indict her for a crime. And so you're wondering, how is all of this connected? But it is. And that's where Depraved Heart comes from, the term, because it means such a reckless indifference mm-hmm. to someone's well-being that you will do anything regardless of what the consequences might be. And that's this type of person who is behind what is happening to these characters. It is a real cat and mouse. It is very suspenseful. And I think probably just for a good old scare, it's probably one of the spookiest books I've ever done.
Oh, and that's saying a lot for you. But you're talking. It sounds like a pure psychopath here in this book.
But somebody unbelievably diabolically clever. You imagine the dark side. If she had an evil twin and what that person would be capable of, that is the sort of mindset and intelligence and evil that you're dealing with in depraved heart, and we just don't know, we're not sure who's doing it or why, and it's like the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain, something, some intelligence that is causing things to happen. And even Scarpetta is realizing that she is being washed away in this current, that she doesn't have a whole lot of free will about what is happening. And then we start to wonder, then how is she going to save the day if she's being manipulated like everyone else? So this really puts her through her paces in a way we've never seen before.
We're talking with Patricia Cornwell. Depraved Heart comes out October 27th. Patricia, let's talk about your writing process, because as a writer myself, a little tiny one compared to you, I'm excited to learn what you... it's true. Do you have killed off a lot of people in your books? Do you enjoy killing people?
Wow, how does one answer that question? Spoken like
fictionally.
A lawyer. Yeah. You know, I think what I enjoy is creating a scenario that someone like Scarpetta is going to come upon, and she's going to have to deconstruct it, take it apart, and put it back together again to figure out what on earth happened here. And so what I do enjoy is coming up with types of deaths and evidence that at first is going to, you know, really steer Scarpetta in the wrong direction or not make any sense to her at all. I like to try to trick her. Not so much enjoy killing people as coming up with things that I am going to give you such a hard time, my friend. And then she, lo and behold, has got to sort through it and work her way out of it and save the day. So that's what's really fun to me. And the more you learn about forensics, for example, the more you can also turn this information on itself and on its head, and you can have something that's absolutely true, but it's telling you the totally wrong story. And I know, as a really savvy attorney, you see this sort of thing out there where just because DNA may be positive for a certain person, that doesn't mean that that person has anything to do with what you're working on.
That's right.
Item may have gotten into that room for some other reason, or it might have been contaminated. There's lots of different things that can happen, and the analysis may be accurate, but Scarpetta has to stop and think for a minute and go, well, just because that's somebody's blood, does that really mean this happened the way we're supposed to think, or is it there for another reason? And so these are some of the questions that she's confronted with, almost like a video game, where every time she advances some distance, this other thing pops up in front of her and she has to deal with it and figure it out.
You mentioned types of death, and that made me think, do you have a preferred method of killing that makes it harder for Scarpetta to figure out what it was? Do you have a preferred alibi, for example? I guess that's two questions in one, but preferred method and preferred alibi.
Well, again, it's got to do with choosing methods that give me a lot to work with as opposed to my just trying to be gory. So, for example, I tend to like scenes that involve blood, if I possibly can, because blood is like the hieroglyphics of our existence in terms of it can tell so many stories if you know how to interpret the language. And blood spatter, the pattern analysis of it, and Scarpetta is completely caught up with that in the beginning of Depraved Heart because there's a blood pattern on the floor where this woman's body is, and it's not making sense to her. It's not making sense to Scarpetta. And then she's going to find something else that's going to tell her yet another piece of the puzzle. And so I like evidence, and the more sterile and sanitized a killing is, the less evidence there is, and that gives me less to work with. So, for example, in Flesh and Blood, my last book, the real challenge was having these sniper shootings in which the killer may have had absolutely no physical contact with the victim ever. Now, that's a tough kind of case to work, and I had like one hand tied behind my back in terms of what I had available to play with, but that was also part of the challenge. In Depraved Heart, we have an abundance of blood evidence, trace evidence, microscopic debris found in strange areas of the house or in a dust bunny that's in one of Scarpetta's crime scene trucks. And lo and behold, there's stuff in it that goes back hundreds of years. Where did this come from? What's it doing here? How is this related to the violence that's going on? And, of course, it all is.
And does she consult pathologists? You know, in the book, or do you? I mean, your background is medical examinations. Do you consult a pathologist like Dr. Michael Bodden, for example?
Well, what I do, and I remind people that I am an English major. You know, I'm not a real lawyer. I'm not a real doctor. I'm not a real scientist. So I've always had a tremendous group of experts, and my consulting forensic pathologist right now is the chief medical examiner of Broward County, Florida, Dr. Craig Malik, who used to be the chief of the Armed Force Medical Examiners. And he, so there isn't much he doesn't know about, and we will discuss certain aspects of forensic pathology or anatomy or whatever I might be looking into. And what I always do is when I'm finished with my book, I have certain experts read it, like Dr. Malik, like my friend August Crocker in Texas, who's my weapons consultant, and he helps me with knives and arrows and bows and guns, spear guns, whatever it is. So I have, you might say I run with a very interesting crowd.
Well, if you ever need legal help, let me know. I'm here for you.
I am going to do that. You know, that is, I find the legal stuff is in many ways the most difficult because that is not what I've had my exposure in. I didn't, you know, spend years working in a courtroom or working with the prosecutor's office. So, yeah, legal questions. And Scarpetta is an attorney, so I have to be smart about that and not get things wrong.
When you start a novel like this, like Depraved Heart or Flesh and Blood before that, do you plot it out, you know, chapter by chapter? Do you know where you're going, or is it more of a organic thing that kind of just happens?
That's a really good question, and it really is an organic process, which makes it very frustrating if you're trying to describe it to another writer or give advice to people, because I think every writer has a very individual process. For me, I write my books very much the way Scarpetta would work a case. I start with a scene, I put her in the middle of something, and then I start following the evidence, and I just really totally inhabit her character and try to think what she would think and feel what she feels and smell what she smells and remember what she remembers and do what she would do. And after 25 years of walking around in her shoes, that's a pretty comfortable position for me once I get into it. What's odd about it is when I'm done with a book and I've gone off doing research or other things for a while, when I have to then sit down and do this again, it takes me a while to inhabit her so totally that I can just move through the story. There's no other way to do it, and it completely envelops me while I'm writing it.
Well, you sound like you're so close to Scarpetta. Are there times when you really think she's a real person you might see in the grocery store, for example?
Well, you know, I keep thinking that would be so much fun to run into somebody someday where I stop in my tracks and I go, holy smoke, wait a minute, you look like. But it's, you know, but what I do is what makes these Scarpetta stories really fun to read is really not the procedures or the details. And yes, I will show you all sorts of things about what it's like to work really difficult cases or to fly a helicopter or to ride motorcycles or scuba dive or work in the labs or do autopsies. I will show you those things in a way that is palpable to you because I researched them very carefully. But at the end of the day, the reason you really want to read Depraved Heart or any of these Scarpetta books is because she is worth it. She is a really fun and interesting character to spend a huge amount of time with. And what I'm trying to show you isn't so much what she does, but what it feels like to be her and what it's like to be her, what her life is like. And I take you on a journey where you feel you are Scarpetta, doing everything that she does, whether it's cooking a great Italian meal or dealing with a really gruesome homicide.
Well, you're in Wheel of Justice, so I have to ask you the question of what role does justice play in your novels?
At the end of the day, justice always must prevail, and that's what makes them fiction, because we know in real life that doesn't happen a lot of the time, where justice, despite our best efforts, doesn't prevail. Because humans are flawed, and sometimes, despite how hard people work on a case, they just haven't been given what they need to really come up with the answer. We don't always get the evidence that we want. In the world of Scarpetta, she always has what she needs to solve something, but unfortunately, it doesn't work that way in real life and death. So we should always strive for justice, and in the end of my book, Scarpetta certainly gets it, but sometimes it isn't in an orthodox way. Because her number one mission is to get the job done, and she does.
And she always does. You mentioned a few minutes ago advice for, you know, up-and-coming authors, young authors. What would you advise those folks?
Well, the first thing I always tell anybody who wants to be a writer or anything, whether it's an artist or an athlete, you will never be good at something unless you're willing to be bad at it first. So start with that. Just walk into it, open up that computer screen, go out and do something and expect that you will be pretty bad at it, because that's the way everything begins. And if you can't stomach that, you're not going to get there. And the second thing to remember is that rejection is not necessarily a measure of your worth, because if it were, I would, I don't know that I would be here, because I had so many failures before I finally had success. And I know what that feels like. It beats you down pretty badly and you get tempted to give up. But if it is your voice to tell a story, whether it's in song or in writing or in a film or in a courtroom when you're presenting a case to the jury, if that is who and what you are, you must never give it up. You should do it. Just keep trying.
I read somewhere, I don't know where I read it, Patricia, but I read somewhere that your first book, Postmortem, you were having a signing, and nobody bought a copy, and you only fielded one question, and that was an older lady asking where the cookbooks were. Is that true?
That's a true story. It's even a worse true story if you know the rest of it, because this particular bookstore was in walking distance of the morgue, and it was a religious bookstore. Start with that. I mean, but it was my last ditch effort to get a book signing, because when Postmortem was finally accepted, there was no budget for marketing, there was no publicity. It was a tiny printing of 6,000 copies. So I took it upon myself to do anything I could to let people know that this book was out there. And I walked to this local bookstore, and I talked to the guy who ran it. I talked him into doing a signing for me. I even gave him my only case of books to put in the window. Those are like worth $2,000 a piece now, which I have back. And he put on this signing for me, and not a single person showed up. I sat there on my lunch hour from the morgue, hung my little lab coat on the back of my door and trotted down the road, sat for an hour in a store feeling like an idiot. And yes, one lady came up and asked me where the cookbooks were. And that was my first book signing in the world of fiction. It was not a good experience.
Well, I think you've had better ones since then. You've sold more than 100 million copies. But it's great to hear about humble beginnings, because I think that makes everybody feel like, okay, maybe we could do it. You know, we could do that. What's next for Scarpetta?
You know what they say, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. It really is true. So I'm very grateful for those early experiences. You know, three books that nobody wanted, then Postmortem almost didn't make it. And then lo and behold, it went on to win, you know, five awards, and all these other things have happened. But I've never forgotten what it feels like to be so beaten down and feel like a total failure. And I don't ever really want to forget that, because I think it's what makes me strong. I know that I can take setbacks. I know that in order to win, you also have to know how to lose. I mean, I learned that in tennis when I was growing up. So, but that's, again, what I tell people trying to do anything. Don't let someone tell you no. Don't let someone tell you you can't do it. Keep trying until you decide for yourself that that's not for you.
Patricia, great advice. Patricia Cornwell, thank you so much for coming by Wheel of Justice. And everybody, Depraved Heart, Patricia's next book comes out October 27th. You've heard her describe it. It sounds fantastic. I'm running out to get it. And Patricia, thank you so much for being with us.
It's always wonderful to talk to you, and I hope I see you real soon.
Absolutely. Till next time, I'm Lise Wheel for Wheel of Justice.